Note before we begin, I asked Jake's permission to share this story and allowed him to read and change anything he wanted. Very important to me. Last fall, I was making dinner when Jake came to me and asked if he could watch something. I told him no, that he'd already been on the screen too much. He didn't like my answer, but I held my ground. I had to go out and grab something from the garden for dinner, so I headed outside. When I got back to the house, Jake was coming down the stairs crying. I was annoyed. I thought he was probably just upset that I told him that he couldn't watch the TV. He wouldn't say why he was upset. At that point, Bones came in. She saw him crying and sat down to ask him what was wrong. Still, he wouldn't say. She tried guessing, but nothing was landing. Finally, it became clear that whatever he was upset about was more than about watching. So I stopped making dinner and lay down with him on the couch. And I told him I wasn't going to try to guess, but that he could whisper it to me when he was ready. After a few minutes, he leaned over and whispered, and he said, "I think I lost my imagination." Right? I could never have guessed that. He had gone upstairs to play with his toys, and it just didn't work like it used to. I said, "Oh gosh, buddy, I'm so sorry. I can understand why you feel so sad. I know your imagination has been a good friend to you. Sometimes as we get older, our imagination changes. It's not gone now, but it might be different." Oh, my heart. I get it. It's hard to feel like you have lost the ability to imagine, to play, to dream, to hope, to feel joy or awe or delight. I know sometimes when I get caught up in the unyielding cycle of bad news, I feel like I have lost the ability to imagine that the world could be different, to dream that justice is still possible, to hope or believe that God is present. I told you last week that I want to believe that miracles are possible, but sometimes they feel impossible. As Bethany said, today we are beginning a new series. This one was developed by the UCC, and they call it Imagine Together. The UCC created this series for churches to use during their stewardship season, which is what we're doing, but it's also more than that. It is an invitation to imagine what this world could be, to imagine how God's presence and restoration can be experienced in the here and now, and to imagine how we as a church can be part of God's redeeming work in this world. It's a great time in the life of our congregation for us to imagine together. We have enjoyed 2 years of regaining stability after the pandemic, of healing after years of pastoral transition, and of creating new ways of sharing leadership together. This has been a lot of necessary internal work, but now we are in this place of trust and joy and hope, if not for the world, at least for our congregation. It's time to build on that work by imagining who we want to be in our community and as partners in God's works of love and justice in this world. You might be thinking, now doesn't feel like a great time, Karen. I'm barely hanging on for these next few weeks as the election unfolds and our country grapples with deep divisions and our neighbors struggle to recover from hurricanes and. I think that's exactly why this is the time. We don't have to imagine the chaos that can happen. We see it daily in the news, in the paper, on our social media feeds, and in our lived experiences. We don't have to imagine that because it is the stark reality of our lives. What we need is an antidote to the despair, is a better imagination for what could be and how we can help bring about that new world. As we look at our scripture passage, I want you to know that I'm borrowing heavily from a woman named Barbara Lundblad and her interpretation of this chapter of Isaiah. She's the one who created those substitute verses 5 and 6 in the reading. The book of Isaiah is typically broken down into 2, sometimes 3 books, depending on who you ask. Chapter 35 comes in the section known as 1st Isaiah. This section of Isaiah describes God's coming judgment if the people do not turn from their injustice. Now, that section is not without some words of hope, but only if the people change and repent and turn from their ways. The chapter right before our reading describes massive ecological destruction and a world that is in agony. And then comes these beautiful poetic verses about a world transformed and redeemed. And then the next chapter goes back to destruction, ending with the temple being destroyed and the people of Israel being pushed out into exile. Now, 2nd Isaiah speaks to those people in exile, and it is a book full of comfort and hope and promises that God will redeem and restore the people. Next week, we're going to read something from that section. Barbara Lundblad suggests that this chapter 35 seems more like it belongs in that 2nd Isaiah. This poetry describing the reconciled world certainly seems out of sync with the desire warnings on either side of it. And scholars have debated about why it's there. Why does it appear right there? Was it intentional on Isaiah's part? Was it inserted later? Did somebody mess up when they were compiling the text generations later? Whatever the case, it serves the same function. In a world facing chaos and destruction, these words offer a vision of hope. They interrupt the narrative of devastation and despair. They invite us to imagine a world made whole despite all the evidence to the contrary. Lundblad calls it a word that couldn't wait until it might make more sense. I love that. If we think about our history, justice has always been moved forward by those who had the imagination to believe that another world was possible. Even before the world was ready, even when the world told them to wait until the time was right. The time is always right to work toward beloved community. Isaiah's words here may feel out of place, but they don't exist in isolation. They are so comforting because they arise during devastating times. They are honest and acknowledge that there have been deserts and wilderness. The people have felt weak and unsteady. Jackals and lions have preyed on the vulnerable, while fools have tried to lead them astray. That metaphor is as true today as ever. But Isaiah paints a beautiful picture of a world redeemed that calls to our imagination, not in spite of the despair, but because of it. Last weekend at the annual meeting, our denomination's general minister and president, Karen Georgia Thompson, spoke. She began with that poem that Nancy read for us this morning, then talked about how the church can envision the future given the present reality of dwindling church attendance and shrinking budgets. There's a lot of hand-wringing in church leadership spaces and fear about what the future holds. Instead of seeing it as a negative, though, Thompson encourages us to see it as a possibility to create something new. She used the word dreaming rather than imagination, but it's the same thing. Creating something new requires letting go and leaving behind comfortable places. She said, hope is in the opportunities before us if we are willing to see past our fears. Now, I think we at Sojourners are in a much better place than the church at large. We have lots of positive momentum, relative financial stability, yet we are also called to look beyond the pews, or chairs in our case, to imagine the possibilities of who we can be and how we together can participate in God's work in this world. Before Karen Georgia Thompson's sermon, the dancers of Baltimore Dance Tech did a liturgical dance. The 24 or so dancers wore bright blue and purple and red dresses. They distributed flags to audience members to wave throughout the performances. And the dancers displayed colorful flags, streamers, scarves, waving them around throughout their performance. with athleticism and grace, they twirled and they leapt, and it felt like they just soared all over the sanctuary, filling it with palpable energy and joy. Throughout the weekend, honestly, through most of my waking and dreaming moments these days, I carried the weight of the hurricane and climate change and the unbelievable violence in Gaza and Haiti and Sudan and the division and fear of our political process and the struggles and fears and grief I hear from you and my own personal struggles. All of that feels heavy. Even with that heaviness, though, maybe because of that heaviness, I still got swept up in the joy of their dance. It was an offering of beauty and aliveness and resistance and joy. Their dance called to my imagination about all the ways we might resist the forces of despair so prevalent in our world right now. How might we embody beauty, joy, and love, and justice in this desperately thirsty world? This chapter from Isaiah appears in the lectionary on the third Sunday of Advent. That's the Sunday that we usually light the candle of joy, the pink candle on the wreath. It is a Sunday that interrupts the season of darkness and waiting with the anticipation of the joy to come in God's incarnation in the person of Jesus. Much like these words from Isaiah, Jesus came at an unlikely time in a world filled with despair to remind us that God is with us, Emmanuel, and ultimately to point us to the promise of the resurrection that God can and will redeem God's creation. In an Earth Day sermon using Jeremiah, Ellen Davis says, "Yet together Jeremiah and the gospel affirm that the heart can be regenerated. That is the resurrection hope and the source of all righteous joy, not that God will miraculously undo the destruction we have accomplished, but that by the grace of God we can turn back to God and never stray away again." Substitute Isaiah for Jeremiah in that, and I think the same holds true. I hear in Davis's words Isaiah's promise that not even fools will get lost along the holy way. Isaiah paints a picture of a world redeemed as a promise of what is possible if we allow our imaginations to lead us into participation in God's redeeming, resurrecting work. After Jake shared his fear of losing his imagination, we snuggled for a long time on the couch. Eventually, I went back to making dinner. Not long after that, he had rows of markers lined up, engaged in some sort of imaginary play. Bones looked over and said, "Jake, what are you doing?" "Just playing a game with your imagination," she asked. His imagination is very much alive and well. It's easy fall into despair, but I think our imaginations are also alive and well here at Sojourners. Let us continue to dream about who we might be as a church, to imagine the beloved community we want to help co-create, and to walk on that holy way with God until we live into this magnificent vision of a world made whole.